attention. I can't get no call to action, but I try, and I try, and I try.
Hello and welcome to Call to Action, the go-to podcast for anyone trying to make sense of the world of marketing, business and beyond. In an industry that is a minefield of utter bollocks, we aim to capture our heroes and allies from the front line to have a chin wag with. It's like Pokemon Go, with the single but vital exception that it's not a short-term bandwagon of shite. It's brought to you by Gasp, and I'm Giles Edwards. Today, I've caught Dan Nelken. Having alphabeted it up for some of the world's biggest brands, as well as shiny new startups, Dan's work has appeared in award shows nationally, internationally, and on his mum's fridge. Having, by his own admission, spent over 15 years winging the creative process, he's now dedicating his life and words to better understanding it, all so he can help creative companies and people think faster, bolder, and healthier thoughts. Author of the best-selling and much-loved A Self-Help Guide for Copywriters, it would be no exaggeration to say that Dan has rescued thousands of copywriters and creatives from the clutches of the dreaded inner critic, who, Dan wants us to know, is definitely a ding-dong. Dan says creativity isn't math, but it's closer to math than it is to magic. And by math, Dan, of course, means maths. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you, Giles. So awesome to meet you. Thanks for that intro. So nice.
No worries. Right, seven quick fires. Pen or pencil?
Ooh, pen.
Say it straight or say it great?
I'll start with straight first.
Favorite Dave now, Trot or Harland?
Oh, pass.
Wimp. Make money or make friends?
Wait, I'm going to go back and say Dave Harland. I've never met Dave Trot, but I know that I love Dave Harland. Okay. Sorry, Dave.
Well done, mate. Make money or make friends?
Depends what day of the month it is. I make friends.
Nice.
With money.
Hey, Whipple, squeeze this or a technique for producing ideas?
I'll have to go Whipple. I have to go Whipple. My book wouldn't exist without Whipple. And Say It Straight, Say It Great comes from Whipple, I have to say.
Yeah. We love a bit of Luke here.
Beauty.
This one is ridiculous and unfair. Finn or Poppy?
Okay, today I'm going to choose Finn.
I'm sure you love Finn and not Finn equally.
Yes, she woke up at 5:30 this morning. Those are my kids for those listening. And Poppy woke me up at 5:30 this morning. So I'm choosing Finn today, and I don't care if she can hear that. Yeah.
Finn for the win. Right, last one, weirdly, is Canadian Ryan's. So which side of the fence are you, Gosling or Reynolds?
They're both so handsome. I guess I have to go... Ryan Reynolds, the advertising connection.
That's a bit of logic. Wicked. Cool. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us, mate. I'm looking forward to this. We always start the show by asking our guests about their path to where they are now, often because it's rarely a linear one. I think there's a nice message in there for people at the start of their career. So can you tell everyone listening, what was your first ever jobs? And then what was your first copywriting gig?
Yeah. One of my first paid jobs was actually as a soccer coach. So I played at a decent level when I was a kid. Sorry, football coach.
That's it.
And in the summers, when it was kind of our off season, there was a big soccer school here, and so I worked with a lot of the local pros. And I was a teenager, and we would run these camps through the summer. And so that was my first. First paid job, I would say, as a teenager doing that. And I loved it. Still, to this day, one of my favorite jobs.
Nice. I've also got here that you were a forklift truck driver.
Oh, yeah. So I did probably more of that than coaching soccer. I drove forklift for a couple different companies. That's what I did before I went into advertising. So I was in different programs in university and post-secondary. Nothing was really sticking. I went from psychology to then radio broadcasting, which is where I found copywriting. I was having to write and produce radio commercials for the school radio station. Actually, at that time, there was two guys at the beginning of the year. Their names are Chris Staples and Ian Grays. They are the original founders of the agency Rethink that started out here in Canada and was just awarded like top creative agency in the world, independent creative agency in the world. But those two guys were a creative team at an ad agency called Palmer Jarvis here in Vancouver. And they came and spoke to our class and showed this reel of TV commercials and ads. And I had no idea it was even a job. And that's when I was like, holy crap. And then I had to write these radio spots for the school radio station. And I think it was the only time I felt seen by a professor. It was the only time. I was never a great student, but I was decent at this. And I really enjoyed it. I still wasn't like a strong enough sign for me to go into it. I went to a different university to get a sports psychology degree, which I was like, I do not want to be in school that long. And I always had kind of business ideas. And so I dropped out of school and went back on the forklift. And then I decided I wanted to go to, at the time, it was the one and only kind of copywriting program in Canada. It was in Toronto. It was a one-year program. And so I applied, it got in, hopped off the forklift and finished that program and then hopped back on the forklift because I didn't get work right away. And 6 months later, at around the age of 28, I started my career and at an ad agency.
Oh, wow. And did you know immediately that you'd found what was your path, if that's not too wanky a phrase, when you started the course?
I did. I think I had kind of this buried creativity. I was quite quiet at home. I had two older brothers that were loud. They were funny and I was just quiet, but I obviously soaked up a lot. I think if I didn't have them, I probably would have been a cop or something. You know, I was very rule bound, but they were like kind of lawless and they kept me up late and exposed me to Saturday Night Live and whatever, every show you can imagine from a very young age. And so I think I kind of was like intersecting this being very rule bound and then breaking all of these rules. And so I could have never been a cop. And I think that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now. It's like, I'm kind of bringing structure to creativity, which is making a whole lot of sense for me. It's making it easier. And that's why I'm on this path.
Yeah. I really liked something that came out of the research for the episode was a line you said that you had to get lost first before finding copywriting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same right now with what I'm doing and creating content and just trying different things. Like, I don't know exactly where I'm headed. I have a general idea, but I'm like, I just keep trying things and it's ruling things out and ruling things in when we're just thinking about what we want to do, overthinking, researching. You're not going to find the answers. Like, you just find them by doing things and rule things out and you just get closer and closer. And I think that probably never stops in life.
Yeah. So what was your first copywriting gig then? What agency did you start at, assuming it was even agency side?
Yeah, it was an agency called Cossette. It was at the time the biggest agency. They had two or three in Canada. And I was on a week-to-week contract. I was getting paid peanuts. And so I hopped off the forklift and I was a 50% pay cut to start in an ad agency. I had no partner. I had my own little cubicle. And every Friday, I had to ask if I could come back on Monday. And that went on for probably 3 months. And then there was a brief for McDonald's. They were doing, it was a TV, radio, outdoor, and then print at the time. Obviously, no digital tells you how long ago it was. And the art director on this team just came by and was like, hey, if you want to think on this brief, go ahead. And I was like, oh, no one talked to me for like 3 months. And I was like, okay. And I just went nuts. I filled like two sketchbooks. It was like 2 days later. I'm like, here you go. Here's a bunch of ideas. And he plucked a bunch of them out along with him and his partner's ideas. Creative director came and looked at the wall. I sat there and he picked, I think, 8 campaigns that he wanted us to do up to present. I think 7 of them were from my sketchbook. So he didn't know, only, you know, the other team knew. And so that ended up leading to, fairly early on, a TV spot, outdoor, And it was so successful for McDonald's, the campaign, they had budgeted to buy X amount of potatoes from Russet Baker Potatoes. They had to pull, they pulled the entire campaign because they were selling so quickly. I don't know how much you can attribute to, you know, what came out of my sketchbook. And of course, this art director recognizing that that was a good idea. And, you know, he deserves a lot of credit. And actually, after that, I found out much later that that creative team was in the creative director's office. And he said, how was it working with Dan? And he said, I didn't say anything because I was going to let the writer speak up. I didn't want to like speak and say he was great because it would make her look bad. And she didn't say anything, not because, not for any reason. She just, she, for whatever reason, she didn't. And he just went back to him and said later and said, by the way, Dan was awesome and I'd love to work with him again. And that, I think, saved me. I would have been, I don't know, applying for forklift positions if he didn't do that. He later became my partner. We went on to do some like great things together and he's still a really good friend.
Nice. And was that the end of the week-to-week contract?
Yeah, it was. It was. Nice. Yeah.
I must say, by the way, before we move on, that you're not the first former forklift truck driver we've had. Rory Sutherland had his time on a similar type of truck working at Ribena picking blueberries.
Oh, no way. That's yeah, awesome.
There's form here.
I think I might have written a line somewhere that was like something to do with like best... former forklift driver turned, but I may not be the best best-selling author / best forklift driver. Yeah.
Amazing. Do you think there was value in the getting lost part of your years before you, I think you said you were 28?
Yeah, just as getting lost for much of my professional career is helping me as a creator. I think because like to be creative, you draw on your life experience. And if you don't have any, I think if I would have started my career early on, I would have had less to draw from. I feel like I had way more ideas at the beginning of my career. And then, you know, you kind of get into advertising, you're consumed by ads, you're looking at awards annuals and the best ads and all of your ideas are derivative of other ads and everyone presenting ads to you says it's kind of like this. And I just get sick of it. I'm just like, what are we doing? It's like you just kind of lose sight of things. When you start your career, I feel like you're more drawing on culture. You're drawing on other things. So it's important to have other experiences and get your head out of advertising at all times, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. And it's interesting, as I said in the intro, you've talked about winging the creative process. And that's something that's, you know, kind of developed over time. And then you're actively looking to inspire or at least inform other creatives on what that could look like to better their own output. I would have thought the copywriting course you did would have taught you process of a certain type, and actually it was the life experiences which was the bit that can only really happen over time. Am I getting those the wrong way around?
No, but you know what, I would say I didn't get much structure from the copywriting school. You know, it was like in, you mentioned Luke Sullivan's Hey Whipple, Squeeze This. In that book, he says to write one great headline, you have to write 100. And this was kind of something the school said as well. For me, that was like a struggle to write them. I was like, okay, I get that. I want to do great work too. But there was no like, how do you do that? Here are different ways to do it. And I haven't shared it yet. So in the course that I now teach, it's called Writing Under Pressure. I was like, what are the headline techniques I would draw on if I was feeling stuck or I was like an aggressive deadline? And so I just took one of those techniques and I'm like, could I write 100 headlines just using one of these techniques or the tips I share? And I blew way past it. It was, I don't want to say easy, but I actually enjoyed the process. When through much of my career and even in school, it was a struggle to do. I knew I had to do it. And then you'd present and they'd say, no, 200 more. You'd be like, it was just mean. And so I think I've spent a lot of time, well, I know I have, going, okay, it doesn't have to be this way. How can we enjoy this a bit more? And I didn't know how many other people were like me. And so when I wrote the book, I was like, well, if this helps, you know, one other person other than me, it will be worth it. Someone messaged me the other day saying, it was written a book that I know and it's in our world. And he said, how many test readers? How did you go about finding test readers? And I'm like, none. I'm like, my mom read it. My wife reluctantly read it. I, not that I didn't take it seriously, it was, I just wanted to like create something helpful. And I didn't at the time feel like, oh, I'm a name in this industry and I'm going to share everything I learned. So like it was pretty genuine and littered with typos, and I fixed most of them, I think.
Yeah, you said when you first published the book, you had two goals and the first was to finish it.
Yeah.
Is that something that you actively kind of noticed for years? Because I know that you're a huge advocate for creatives being creative for their own purposes and for their own development and betterment, I suppose. Is that something you'd struggled to do previously, or had you just never really followed it through for whatever reason?
Yeah, I think with all my ideas, I think even when I got into advertising, it was because I had ideas for things, you know, for it was like kind of entrepreneurial, but I just didn't know how to do anything, you know. I knew I was creative, and then advertising gave me the box to think in, and here's a brief, and it was just amazing that I got to think on, you know, it's so cool when you're writing TV spots. I did so much TV earlier in my career, but when it came to creating for myself, which is I think where I don't say I've come full circle, but I'm like, oh yeah, it all makes sense now. This is why I got into it. I just didn't know how to do it, or was too afraid to like see things through. And now that the book for me was like, just finish one thing and then you will do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Do one thing for yourself. So it was so important for me to finish it. Of course, getting older too, I just got to a moment where I was like, are you full of shit? Are you never going to do anything for yourself? Like if you are, just go get a job like a normal person and stop doing this. And, you know, finding out we were expecting our second child was a huge motivator for me to finish the book, because I was like, oh, okay, I could wait another 5 years until she's in school. But I'm like, and I sometimes think about my dad, who's going to be 80 soon. He's like, he wants to write a book. He's been saying it for like 40 years and he will never write a book. Sorry, Dad. But I'm like, I can't. This is kind of the path I'm on. And I did not want to be the person who was full of shit. And so I'm like, I have to finish it.
Nice. How did you start writing it then? I've talked to so many authors in the last 5 years on the podcast, and it's always quite interesting how different they are. You almost expect there to be like a core consistent with the writing process. I'll never forget Paulina Tenner, her name is, and she's a huge advocate for what she calls the vomit edit, where you literally just vomit up any information you can and just get everything out of your body, and then you start editing and assembling it. And then similarly, I've spoken to perfectionists who almost write it as their first draft, and they agonize over every word, and it's a real kind of trial and a torment of sorts. What was it like for you?
I didn't even set out to write a book. Was maybe I'll just say 10 years ago, there was a guy I knew who was creating online courses, and we were kind of running this animation studio together at the time. I was taking a break from the ad world. He created these online courses because we had done a video for a company called Udemy. They do online courses. They still exist today. And he was doing quite well. And he's like, Dan, you should make one. And I was like, yeah, what would I make? So it was like a course on writing headlines. And very early on, like, you know, I hadn't thought about it too much, but I was like, I had a thought, and it was, oh, why do I get stuck? It's like, because I'm trying to start the process by writing headlines. And I wrote down, writing a great headline isn't a great sentence. It's a great idea expressed in words. So I was like, ah, yeah, you have to come up with ideas first. This is the part I'm missing. It's not just writing. And so I met at the time with a creative director for Lululemon. Met him for lunch. They wanted me to do a contract. I couldn't. But in this conversation, I said, oh, I'm making a course, which I never would have made, like a lot of my ideas. And I said, and here's what I realized about writing headlines. And it was just that sentence. And then that was it. It was like 2 minutes of our conversation. I get home and he said, it's too bad you can't work for us, but can you come in and teach that course to our writers? And so that was it. And I said, yeah, I'll send an estimate over. And all I had was that one line. So I sent him an estimate. I said, I'll send a high estimate. And in the estimate, I said, it comes with a booklet that summarizes all these tips. So I had some idea of what it would be. And he said, you know, can you also sort out lunch? And I was like, fuck, yes. So I had 3 months and I never collected a deposit, but I was a month away. And this booklet that I was making in PowerPoint, sorry, to all the creatives out there, yes, it was PowerPoint, and
I'll edit that out.
Pages. Thank you. Keynote. I did it in Keynote, put that in. It was about 80 pages long. And I hadn't created these course slides. I'd never taught a course before in my life. I didn't know what I was doing. He got canned, and that was that. So I had 80 pages of this booklet. And I was like, this kind of feels like a book. So I just chipped away at this PowerPoint deck. And, you know, I get busy with work, and then I'd get to it, and it just was taking shape. And it was just something I would just work on. And then I got serious about it. Like, I don't even know time-wise, published it like 2.5 years ago. So it was probably 5 years ago where I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this thing. And I just kept in between contracts. And then as I got closer and closer, I would take breaks like a month in between contracts and just work on that book. So that was kind of my story.
Awesome. You've said that you wrote the book that you think you've always needed. So it was written for past Dan. Were you surprised how many kind of past Dan shaped creatives there were out there who responded so well to the book?
Surprised is not even the word. Like, I don't know what the word is. I'm shocked at, I hear from people, I got a message the other day, someone just got into like a junior copywriter, DNAD awards, just won something. Another kid was like, it was me and 5 interns and we all had to write headlines. He said, I by far crushed everyone and this kid got the job out of the 5. Like, I also hear from partners at the biggest ad agencies in the world. Because it's funny, you know, I wasn't like running a massive global network. Like, I was a freelancer. I was kind of like frustrated. You know, I didn't move up the corporate ladder. So I was going to take a job that was under like, you know, I was overqualified for, which I didn't want to do. So I didn't know who it would help. But it shows me just like how much we all have in common, as different as we all are. Like, this creative struggle is just so common and similar. Like, we're all going through it. It's amazing to me. Like, it's crazy. It's been crazy. Obviously, I wanted it to do well. And maybe it was like just protective to say, oh, I don't care if it helps one person. but I'm still shocked when I hear from people. Yeah, I'm truly just blown away.
One of the things that you talk about and we touched on very briefly at the start was creative confidence and that importance of like maintaining creative confidence. So firstly, it'd be interesting to know how you recommend people can do that. But the second point was, has the success of the book helped you maintain your own creative confidence?
Yeah, I think more than maintain, it helped me gain it. And it's an interesting thing too, because I wrote the book from, I don't know, say an insecure place, because I have confidence in other ways. There were certain things I just didn't when it came to ideas, even though, you know, I'd won awards and done whatever. But it was to finish this book called A Self-Help Guide for Copywriters. And then people are like, let's get this expert on our podcast. I'm like, I'm not an expert. So wrapping my head around that, and then I make this course, and I know I am an expert now. I'm so much better than I've ever been. I'm faster. I can help people. So it was actually, that's also something I had to learn, like how to accept that. It has helped me, and all the messages from people. And I'm just like, I was moved to tears so many times. Like, I'm just like, what? Really? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. What piece of advice on creative confidence would you give to, like, typically to juniors entering the advertising industry? Because they all have their own, you haven't told us who Alan is yet, but they all have their own Alan.
Oh, yeah. There's two things. Like, go directly at your insecurity, because that's the thing most of us hide. And you know what? The whole fake it till you make it kind of thing, or whatever you want to call it. And you just bury it. And this is why you feel like an imposter. Because you're like, only I feel this thing, because I can't share it with anyone, because then everyone will know. I'm not saying like share it with everyone, but actually look into what an imposter syndrome is. Write down the things that inner voice is saying. Like, you start to see. It's like I always use the analogy, it's like pulling back the curtain, like Toto in The Wizard of Oz. There's this great booming voice that feels so threatening, and then Toto pulls back the curtain and there's this frail old man, bumbling old man, yelling into this megaphone. Like, that's kind of our inner critic. But if you never look at it, you never pull back the curtain, you're always just going to be terrified of this thing. So that's one way I would say, like, pay attention to it. Don't just bury it and think you have to live with this thing. But it's also there for a reason, probably because we haven't worked on our craft enough. And you can't just wing the creative process. You can't have confidence if you don't know how you do what you do. And every time you show up at the blank page, you're like, I'm creative, ideas should come. And then they don't. And you say, well, I'm not creative. I'm going to have to fight through this again. Like, what if you knew how you did what you did and you knew the different techniques and creative patterns and broke down hundreds of ads and found, like, oh, how they work and how was this campaign done, and just become a lifelong student of the craft. Then you know how you do what you do. You won't be alone with that voice. So those are the two things I would say. Confront your inner critic and work on your craft.
Yeah, that strikes me. It's really interesting. And it strikes me there's an element of control there as well, once you're aware of that structure and process that's required.
Yeah, well, now I have like a million techniques and tips and prompts for myself that I'm like, oh, I'll just try this. Which, of course, I do still wing it, but I don't have to. And the one thing I find by embracing some of these techniques is it's just getting something out. And then you go, and then you can go off, and that's when you get ideas. You have to start with something. That's why so many people say, you know, we hear it all the time, like, bad ideas, just brain dump. But since I've been on this path, I've connected with some of the top creatives in the world. And one thing I'm shocked to learn about their creative process is some of them literally have like 60 prompts that they have. And whether it's writing a headline or a TV campaign for Old Spice, they'll just go through their list of prompts and they fill the walls with ideas. And then they just get other ideas off those ideas that aren't from those prompts. It could be literally anything. Jason Bagley, who is now starting, he's got a school. He worked for Wyden and Kennedy. He was the most awarded creative director in the world. And he's one person I was shocked to learn. He has, like, you know, 60 of these prompts. He teaches in these classes and shares them, and he uses them every time. He's done all kinds of work, like famous work, you'd know from, you know, the Old Spice, I'm on a Horse, and all of that stuff. And he doesn't wing the creative process.
At what stage did you find that you stopped winging the creative process? Is that just something that comes naturally from experience because you've had to do it the hard way? When you filled those two sketchbooks of ideas for McDonald's, presumably you would just, that was quite a chaotic process compared to the process and recommendations we'd find in your book.
Yeah, it was. I think then I would, maybe now, I think as you have more experience too, you rule out bad ideas quicker. You maybe don't even write them down. So I think I slowed down quite a bit from those early days. I was just so excited to be able to use my brain. But at what point, honestly, it was probably as I was writing the book, because I was just writing what I needed and I was piecing it together as I did it. And then I was able to kind of test what I was saying as I was doing it. And because it took me from start to finish really on this project about 10 years. So I was always thinking about it. What made sense and how would I teach someone? What did I need and what would have helped me? And so I kind of broke it down in that way. So it would have come together only in the last 10 years. And I think making that course made me even better because I just honed in on some of, it was like one paragraph in the book that I turned into a 3-hour course essentially.
Yeah. And is that effectively what you mean by the quote I used for you in the intro, that creativity isn't maths, but it's closer to maths than it is to magic? The idea that it's sort of almost like an equation or a prompt, as you, to use your language.
Yeah. I mean, there's been studies done that have broken down all award-winning work from Cannes and say all of the work falls into one of these six categories. And then those have subcategories, all of it. And they've given them names. And the school at Ad House in New York, it's an ad school, they created a deck of cards based on that, kind of came out of that study. Try all of these techniques. You know, how many campaigns are out there where what I call, it's like find an enemy. So there's an antiperspirant in New York that launched. Then they took on sweat was the enemy. But I see it all the time. And then there's a headline technique that is the most commonly used headline technique. It is opposites. So, you know, like, let's say stress is the enemy. less stress lines, more headlines, less and more. Like, you can do like, okay, ChatGPT is an enemy, just as a bucket of ideas. And there you go. There's a bucket of ideas. And then I can write some opposite headlines. I just wrote 100 opposite headlines just as an experiment for, I keep mentioning my course. This is just one long ad for my course. But it's top of mind for me because I just did this exercise. And that's one technique, 100, like, and I could just keep going with them. And I have a million of these combinations. And I don't just approach it like a robot. But I do think that you look at how fast AI can write. It's obviously garbage and mostly a waste of time for creative reasons. But if it can do it that quickly, and most creatives, we need like longer time and we're always asking for more time. How can we work a bit faster? I think we kind of have to, for clients' sake, and even for our sake. Like, yes, you need to leave time in the process to walk away from the work. You need perspective and to look at it with fresh eyes. You need that time. But I don't think it has to take as long. It definitely doesn't have to be as painful as we've made it. And that's what structure can do for you. The most like prolific creatives that are not in advertising often work with very strict structures, like someone like Jerry Seinfeld, or they know how long they can work in a day. They know when they work in a day. Like, we don't even know how the brain works. We just show up and expect it to spit out ideas. Like, that's such a miss in this entire industry. Like, what is it actually capable of? We just sit it in a room, like it's like an interrogation, and hold it there until it spits out ideas. While who knows what we're eating, drinking, staring at our phones, and then we wonder, like, constantly, I'd still do it too, way too much, and then can't focus on a task. Like, I don't know. That's a massive hole too in the education. It was no part of my education. Like, how do you use this thing called a brain? Time, weather,
and... Today's podcast is sponsored by no one. Whether you need research, brand, or strategy, no one brings you absolutely nothing. With simple templates and drag-and-drop tools, you can have a great-looking nothing in minutes. If you have a real marketing challenge you'd like to chat about, though, just email giles@gasp.agency and use the offer code Giles to get 10% off nothing. Brought to you by no one. Time, weather,
and... Brainstorming is something that's always really frustrated me, and I think that follows the same logic that we expect brains to just spit ideas together. So we think, oh, well, let's just maximize the amount of brains in a room and then the idea will follow.
Okay, this will ruffle feathers, but most creatives hate brainstorming sessions. They're never organized by a creative. All the pressure's on you, and then other people are just spitting out any thoughts, which is maybe what I did early in my career, you know, when I filled those two sketchbooks. But we're filtering. But also, we're the only one in the room feeling pressure because, and I don't think people realize how strategic good creatives are. Like, you need to think things through. We're not just spitting out ideas. I think a lot of creatives also think they should be able to do that. And in situations like that, for myself anyway, the panic would increase. And you can't be creative and like, really anxious and stressed at the same time. Like, it's like a relaxed state. When you relax, you release dopamine. Dopamine aids creativity, which is why when you take, they say, a hot shower or go for a walk, you are relaxed. That's also what's happening. It's like based on science. Brainstorming does not like factor that in. It was an old ad man who said there's been another study done where he said it, brainstorming increases creativity by 50%. It's been debunked now. Oh, it was the O in BBDO, Osborne.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah, it's been proven to just be a mostly terrible thing to do. But I would say, here's where the traditionalists would again hate me. If you came in with those prompts, I think, first of all, everyone should bring ideas to a brainstorm session. And they have to be led by someone who gets it. But maybe you came in with those prompts and it was like, I think a brainstorming session would be best if it was, let's just find the ways in. Like, the areas we can explore versus let's solve this problem. And then you give those areas to a creative team. And so everyone's kind of working on strategy, not working on creative. But yeah, I hate brainstorming.
Yeah, and I suppose if we accept that most people do have creative self-doubt, then I suspect that in a situation like that where there's such a heightened expectation and kind of opposite amount of effectiveness going on, it's only going to compound that.
Yeah, I've done some, like, I don't want to say experiments, but like workshops I've done with teams of writers. And I'm always like hesitant because I would have hated it to be like, hey, here's this writing technique and now let's write some lines or we'll all do it in the chat. Some teams have just been on fire and they're like, they get into it and it's fun. But there's others, which is I think maybe the camp I would have been in and might still be in, were just like silent and not comfortable adding anything to the chat and just sat there. So yeah, that's probably more common, that we just need time. It's like a solitary thing to come up with an idea. And most great ideas, I believe, as much as there's like loads of people involved in bringing them to life, came from one brain. And of course, it was like because maybe this person said X and that person said Y, but the like core of the idea came from one brain. So a brainstorm session, it might just get a bunch of stuff out, but I think people have to be realistic of what you can get out of those situations. But they're always excited to like invite a creative to the room, but it is because people who aren't creative by like professional title think that it is magic. You know, it's like when you're put on the spot, like, oh, Dan, you're a writer. What's a clever way of saying X? You're in this boardroom and I'm like, oh my God, I should know. I am a writer. But now I would never, I wouldn't even bother like responding.
Yeah, I should have clarified earlier when I mentioned Alan. Alan, this is a quote from our research. I've named my inner critic. His name is Alan. He's a scared six-year-old half-cave boy who still makes wee-wee in his pants. When he pipes up with insults, I say, hi, Alan, and he goes back under his pea-stained bedsheets. Do you still see Alan, or does Alan pop up less frequently these days?
Yeah, I mean, we're not as close, I would say. But I definitely do, and I'm like doing anything. I just kind of know, and it also creating for myself. I get to think, even making my course, finishing the book. You get to stages doing things for yourself, even podcasts. Like I was thinking about it just before I came on, like when this first started to me, how terrified I was of being on a podcast or worried about what I would say. Like so pushing through, like quietens that mind, and doing things quiets the mind. But I still, doing anything new, I hear that voice, but I'm like, it's almost like now that I've named him, I'm keeping score. And I'm like, hang on a second, I am getting some wins. And then, you know, you get 20 years into a career and I'm like, hang on, I must know something by now. Like this cat, you get a brief and I'm like, oh no, here it is. I'm going to go back to driving that forklift. I'm like, there's no way. Hang on a second. And you start to look at this voice and it has less control, I think, just from getting older. But I think if you're younger, you can, if you're proactive with it, like I said earlier, you can quiet your inner Alan or whatever a lot sooner than I did.
Yeah, and it's probably like a little bit of Alan probably isn't too damaging.
No, exactly. I think you need that. But Jerry Seinfeld had said in an interview, when he learned that creative people were more prone to depression and anxiety, they're generally more sensitive, he said, I learned to appreciate it more because without that, I wouldn't have this. And I want this.
Yeah. That makes complete sense. Someone recommended his book recently to me and I'm yet to buy it.
The podcast interview he did with Tim Ferriss, it's incredible. It's not funny. He talks about his creative process. I think every creative should listen to that. One quote in there, he says, the mind is infinite in its wisdom, but the brain is like a stupid little dog that is easily trained.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
we'll link to that episode in this pod's listing then, so it's easy to find for people. Amazing. The other thing which I suspect, and you've kind of alluded to the fact that it helps sort of get rid of Alan from time to time, is that belief you have that creative people should create for themselves. Is that something that you realistically think creative people should be doing as what comes some kind of side hustle, or is it bigger than that?
You know, I guess everything is like, I'm just projecting myself and my own feelings when I'm creating and saying these things. And it's a, you know, perspective of someone who's been doing this for 20 years. And I think after 20 years, you get used to certain things and there's not enough, maybe as much new. But I also think it can be frustrating working with clients and working in advertising where you're consistently, for the most part, trying to capture other people's voices and with the layers of feedback. And it's not always your work. And I don't know if it's true, but I feel like most people love to be creative and it gives us that avenue. But you want to create like you, and you have something to express and get out. And it's rare to work with clients where you feel like this is an expression of me and the type of creative I would do that makes me laugh or makes me feel a certain way. And I just wanted to feel more of that. I just want to do things my way. Like, I don't care if people love it or this. And it's so freeing for my book, for example. I'll write headlines for it and share them on LinkedIn like a little ad. No meetings, no nothing. I just get to do it and it just feels so good. And I think it's also important because a lot of times we're limited by the clients we have, maybe the agency we work for. And here, this is your chance to do the work you want to do. And then so many people through creating on social, whether it's a little idea they had where you're just experiencing the joy of creating without all the layers and obstacles and the presenting and the how do we sell this idea, and you have to sell it differently to different people at different stages. You're just like, I just want to make something. And that freedom and joy, man, it can also lead to you attracting the right kind of work that is more in line and the brands that are more in line with the type of work you want to do and are capable of doing. But you may not even fully realize what you're capable of because you're stuck working for this telco or your whatever. Like, if you don't feel like you're fitting in right now, then create for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. You were really kind. Prior to recording, not to suggest you've been an asshole since we started, but you said some kind words about isolated talks. And I think in the time of doing isolated talks, it was exactly that. To use your line, joy comes in the doing. It was a time of like huge anxiety and stress, but there was so much more joy from actually being able to do in the context you've just described, where it is just doing it for your own sake. So that makes complete sense.
You know, and I published the book during COVID. And so I actually started creating on LinkedIn and sharing on LinkedIn then too. So my network grew, even socially. Obviously in person it wasn't as great, but man, I was like, I connected with so many people. The first award show I've ever judged was in Nigeria. I mean, that's the other thing with creating anything on social, the impact. It's just insane. And when you create versus like consuming, is a very, very different experience too. Like, you are getting value out of the thing instead of the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. So asking the general public for their opinion, be it on Brexit or boat names, is notoriously fraught with danger. I'm going to see how many I can get in. We've had a few from Word Tonic. Are you familiar with the Gen Z writing community that is Word Tonic?
Yes. Carolyn McMurray?
That's it. Carolyn, absolutely. We had her and Em on recently. I love what they're doing. This one feels like a trap, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway, Dan. And it says, what's the most overrated copywriting book of all time?
Oh, man. Oh, I'm going to find someone to insult. I'll say mine, A Self-Help Guide for Copywriters.
Well played. Yeah, well played. But the only thing that comes to mind then is your point earlier about the O of BBDO and the point about brainstorming. I imagine there's a lot of rogue advice out there. Maybe we should say Copywriting Is by Andrew Bolton. Number two, I saw you in person at a cafe. Are you okay with fans approaching you in public? Brackets. I'm a groupie.
That's funny. It's happened a little bit recently. It's this guy, actually. I was at the playground with my daughter and he came up and said, are you Dan Nelkin? And I was like, I am. What's your name? And then we had this little chat, and then my daughter, you know, started acting up. Anytime I'm having a conversation with anyone, or anyone's, you know, if my wife and I are trying to chat, she gets suddenly super vocal and needs our attention right away. And so I said, well, just send me a message on LinkedIn and we'll continue it there. And so he sends me a message and he says, oh, I didn't realize you messaged me 7 years ago and I never responded. At the time, he was a creative director. And I was like, cool for me to see my progression since then. Because I was like, at that time, my son was one. And I was like, oh man, I think I gotta just go get that normal job. And I reached out to him. I couldn't believe what I wrote because I never, you know, it's been years since I wanted a job, but that's what I was asking him. Anyway, that was 7 years ago. And anyway, he's a good guy. So yeah, say hello, please. Yeah, I'm totally like flattered by that. It doesn't happen a lot. Like it's happened like six times. So yeah, do it.
Nice. The last one from the Word Tonic community on their little Discord group was, what's your one piece of advice to a junior entering the ad industry?
Man, I have so much. But I would say it's a really long career. Like, you don't put too much pressure on yourself to know everything. You won't. You'll never will. But choose one thing that you maybe aren't confident in and focus on that. If you focus on that one thing for a year and you're confident in that one thing, like let's say your career's 30 years. Well, now you're pretty good at that one thing. Then move on to the next thing. Even if you put in your schedule 15 minutes on Friday to work on my craft or to tear down my inner critic, just do that every Friday for your career.
Yeah, awesome. Nice one. I'm going to squeeze this last one in, and it's from, I don't know, who did you guess the silly man was earlier?
Well, it was Dave Harland.
It's actually Andrew Bolton. Damn. Andrew is he's asked, they're both equally silly. Let's just accept that it also
yes,
true.
Okay.
Andrew says, as a lad of around 10, my chums and I went through a phase of describing something that was really good as Dan, as in,
oh my God.
As in Giles's new LA gear trainers are well Dan. As a superb writer and a Canadian gentleman, what's the best childhood slang for good you can recall?
Oh man, Andrew. I got nothing. See, this is like being put on the spot in a brainstorm session.
Yeah. I like Dan. I'd never heard of that. I'd never heard of Dan as being something really good. That's well Dan.
No. No, I wish Alan knew that 30 years ago.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be Alan, but yeah, no, thanks, Andrew. You'll be hearing from me.
Yes, from your lawyers. I'll tell you what, I'll leave that with you. We'll have a few weeks before this comes out. If anything springs to mind, send me an email and I'll include it in the listing. So again, if you're listening now, you can see if there's anything else further. If not, we'll just slag off Andrew or something else that's equally rewarding.
Giles ain't bad. That's pretty Giles. That's okay.
He'll hate that answer. Thank you.
There we go. Awesome.
The final part of the interview then, Dan, is the four pertinent poses, starting with, what advice would you give to your younger self?
It would be like, be selfish with maybe other people's knowledge. Like, I think like when you start your career, like ask everything.
Yeah.
And do it in a way like you're one day going to start your own thing, whether it's your own brand or your own agency. Don't worry about the value you're providing for them. Obviously you want to, but I think that gets too much attention. Like, learn as much as you can. Because I think I didn't ask enough questions, or just would like pretend I knew something and nod and find out later, but just ask and soak up as much as you can and always be planning your exit. Like, so who would I want to build something with? Who would I want to make? What would I want to make? Just be thinking about that. Because I think even if you never do, you'll be very successful, because you'll just be collecting all this information for yourself to maybe do something one day. But even if you don't, you'll be leading agencies and leading brands. And if you do, you will have been planning it the entire time.
Nice. Great advice. It's so rare to get answers to these questions that haven't come up before. So that's all. Let's see if we can do it for the next three. If you could banish one thing from the industry, what would it be and why?
The one that's coming up for me is the word disruption. I think it's just used so much that it's just become another buzzword. that it's nothing. I've had clients say, we want to make something disruptive. And I'm like, you know what disruptive means. It's like not normal, which means when we present it, you're going to feel uncomfortable and you're going to think to yourself, there's no way we can do this. There's no way we can sell this. I can't take this to my boss. Like, that's disruptive. Like, I don't mind the word, but it's been used so much that it's become nothing. And I think we need to find another word.
I think for similar kind of evolutionary reasons, the word brave needs to go as well.
Yes. Yes. I agree.
Number three, aside from a self-help guide for copywriters, which we will link to, encourage everyone to check out, are there any books that you can recommend to our listeners? And these needn't be business or copywriting books. They can't be fiction.
Okay, I'm going to mention a book that maybe somebody hasn't mentioned. And it's called Mind Management, Not Time Management by David Kadavy. And that will help you understand a bit more about how your brain works. It's like, you know, when you're in a creative session and you spend 8 hours, but you're like in 15 minutes, you're like, man, I got so much done in those 15 minutes. This book will help you. Like the author kind of, that was his path. He was like, oh man, what if I could just do those 15 minutes? And so he just kind of like, there's a ton of research on the brain. It's like, it's well written. It's a great one that I'd recommend.
That definitely hasn't come up before. So you're on a roll. Is that good just for individuals, or is that something that can be useful for like departments and teams of people?
Yeah, I think anyone would benefit from it. It's not a super technical book. Like he's great. Yeah,
amazing. Well, we'll definitely link to that. And then number four is we always dedicate every episode to someone, and we bestow or hospital pass that honor, depending on your view, to our guest, who has to give their reason why. So would you dedicate this episode, Dan?
I'm going to dedicate it to my daughter because we started this. I chose Finn as my favorite child. So Poppy, you know what? I made a note to myself when I was walking. I know exactly where I was on this path where I thought, do I wait another 5 years to do this? And I made a note that said, she didn't have a name. I don't know if we knew we were having a girl, but I said, I'm never going to be able to give you what you've already given me because I'm going to finish this thing. That is like a promise I made to her.
Amazing.
I will dedicate this to her.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. We've come full circle. That's this Yay. Episode is very, very happily dedicated to Poppy. Fantastic.
Yes.
So we're going to include links to, obviously, a self-help guide for copywriters. We'll link to your site because there's more about your courses there also. Mind management, not time management, will be included. How else can our listeners get more Dan Nilken?
I think just send me an invite to connect on LinkedIn. It'd be great to connect there. That's probably the best place.
Cool. We'll include a link there as well. Is that your preferred social media?
I mean, right now it's the only one I create on.
Yeah.
And so I'm fairly active on that one. So maybe one day I'll get into other ones, but that's it for now.
Yeah. Nice. Cool. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Listen, Dan, thank you so much for joining us. This has been awesome. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved it too. Next time I want to pick your brain and ask you questions. I'd love that. Thanks for having me on.
Nice one. Thanks, buddy. And finally, thank you to everyone listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do share and review the pod. Keep your questions and guest requests coming in. To get in touch, it's easy to find Gasp online, or you can email the mouthful, that is calltoaction@gasp.agency.
I can't get no call to action. Call to action, but I try, and I try, and I try, and I try.